Steve Lamb, alcoholic. And you're probably thinking, oh God, him again. And I tell you, I tried to have Beth or Joe talk first, but they immediately pulled the time card on me. Immediately. I mean, Beth did not skip a beat. No, you're first. You're junior, you're first. So we're going to talk about the home group, and we're going to talk about unity, and I'm going to talk for a few minutes and just tell you a couple stories from my experience. My home group is the Hermosa Beach Men's Stag, and it's a men's stag, obviously. There's a women's stag right behind it, same time period. And when I first started going to that meeting, my sponsor directed me to go to that meeting, and I would sit there, and I would come out of that meeting, and then I would go meet him with him Monday nights, and he'd ask me, what do you think about the meeting? I said, I don't like the meeting. Why don't you like the meeting? You know, I mean, all they do is talk about the steps, and, you know. You haven't done any of that stuff yet, right? No. Says after you've done it, you'll like the meeting. I love the meeting now, and because I've done the work, and it's very, very sponsor-oriented, and it's very, very step-oriented. And one of the things that happened that I want to talk about briefly, because it really relates to unity, is I became very invested in that group. I've been secretary of the group. We had a time period, I guess it was 5 or 6 years ago, where we had a really major issue occur. There's a young man who's has a young daughter, and he's a bit of a, he likes to stir up controversy. This is a men's stag. We go into the men's stag, and we notice that he's sitting there, and he's with his daughter in the men's stag. It's a men's stag. It's supposed to be for men. Alcoholics, closed meeting. So we're all kind of looking at this, and he's decided that he's going to create a controversy, and he's done. And his story is, you know, I'm an alcoholic. The fifth tradition is that our primary purpose is to help others to recover. I need to be at a meeting. I need to be here. My daughter's here. You're just going to have to deal with it. Third tradition is the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. So we're in this meeting, and almost fight breaks out in the corner. A bunch of old timers are throwing stuff and getting pissed and yelling at the secretary, get him out. And I'm not as sure exactly what happened, but this is the only time it's ever happened in the 15 years I've been there. We normally have steering committees, and somebody yelled and screamed, we're going to have a group conscience. We had a group conscience on whether to allow this man to stay in the meeting or not. And there was a vote taken, and a bunch of people voted no, and a bunch of people voted yes. I voted to allow him to be in the meeting, which is neither here nor there. It was just because I just thought, I can't see kicking him out right now. Let's just turn it into a newcomer meeting and deal with it later. You know, let's not talk about those types of issues. There were people that were adamant about it. There were about 30 people got up and stormed out of the meeting. Next week, they formed another meeting. Yeah, I'm a lawyer. I'm a facilitator. I like to, you know, so I'm calling these people, trying to bring them back. It wasn't going to happen. You know, we did not have unity. But before this had happened, we'd had a steering committee meeting, and once I'd become invested in this meeting, I noticed that at this particular meeting, if you show up from out of town and you're not a regular attender, if you know a member of the meeting, you can take a cake. I thought that was inappropriate. I thought you should be a regular attender. So I made a motion, and it was shot down by a guy named Clayton, a guy I really love and adore. And he basically said, it's been this way since Christ was a corporal. We're always doing it this way. You know, anybody who comes, if they know a member, they can have a cake. Clayton was the guy who took the contingent and formed the other meeting. What's happened over time is we now have meetings where we have cakes and we give everyone a coin if they have a birthday. And anybody can come, take a cake, and have a coin. If they're a male member of Alcoholics Anonymous, then they know a member of the group. Anybody. Anytime. Anywhere. Clayton and the rules at his meeting have changed. So if you're not an active member of the group, you can't take a cake. Which is what he was opposed to when I made the motion. So now members of his group, because they don't get coins, come to my group for their birthday to take a coin and a cake. Now, I'm not telling you that this is spiritually sound, but I like that. A lot. And if you're around here for a while, you're going to see all these things happen. And there was a big conflict, and now everybody's fine. We get together periodically. And if you stick to the black part of the book, it'll be fine. But groups split. Groups have issues. I've been petty. I've done things. Other people have done things. If you try to keep the collective consciousness of the group first, it'll all be fine because that unity is fine. The thing that I find also interesting about it is my men's stag is about 100 men. It went down to around 40 when we had the split. His went to around 40. I've since been to his meeting. He's been to my meeting. Our groups are about 100. We needed to split, you know. Did we split over the right reasons? No. But is it good now? Yeah, it's good now. And I got to tell you, it's been really important for me to have a home group. We have an annual retreat. We host it. We do a Christmas party. The steps and the meetings are really important, but having that fellowship is really a big deal. You know, I travel a bit, and if I'm gone and I'm not at my home group, I'll get calls. I'll get emails. Where were you? That's really important to have that. And where I go, we don't have assigned seating, but I got to tell you, the guys that I know that have been around there a while, and one guy sits in that corner, I mean, they sit in the same place. And it sounds really juvenile, but it's really comforting for me to go into that room and know Bill is to my, in fact, if Bill is not on my right, he needs to move. You know? Again, not spiritually sound, but it really works. I like people where they're supposed to be. And, I have a control issue. Joe?
Joe Conroy, alcoholic. Thank you, Steve. Good to hear you this morning. Beth, I'm looking forward to tonight. My home group is the Fourth Dimension Group in San Diego. We meet on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. It's a literature study group. That's what we do. We actually have a weird kind of format. First Wednesday night of the month, we have a speaker meeting, and that's when we do cakes and tokens. Like Steve was talking about, Southern California, they really like their cakes and tokens. And sometimes they go on and on and on, but we have limit it to a minute. Limit it, and it just freaks people out. The little bell rings, and they get to stop, and they go, they keep ringing that bell till they stop talking, because people want to go on and on and on. And then, so then the first Monday night, the first Wednesday night is the speaker meeting. The second Wednesday night is a big book study. Third Wednesday night is a traditions night study. The fourth Wednesday night is a, we call it an other AA literature night. So pamphlets and other, the history books. And then there's always a fifth night. There's four or five nights of the year. We have a, somebody from the service structure, either a delegate or a coordinator, somebody from the general service that comes in and talks about general service. And it's really weird. We figured that people wouldn't show up with traditions and general service, but this, and that's a question and answer night. And it really is, it's always full, and it's really kind of weird, and I really kind of like it. My first, that's been going on 12 years, that meeting, and that's my home group now. But my first home group was the Mission Hills group, and it's been going on since 1948. It was started by Jim Burwell, who's the guy that came up with the concept God as you understand him. And I didn't have a home group. I was 11 months sober, and I went home to visit Mom and the family for Thanksgiving, and it was my first trip sober, my first year of sobriety. And I didn't have a home group, and I really want to keep stressing that. I used to go to meetings, and if you just go to meetings, you'll get to know the fellowship, but you won't get to know yourself. So I went home to visit my family, and I came back stock raving crazy. And I looked in the schedule, and there was a meeting on Monday night, and I went to this meeting, the Mission Hills group, and it was like I felt when I walked in. I was talking to Luke about this when I walked in here yesterday. You can tell you guys are a group. You can tell you're a fellowship. There's like, sometimes you go to conventions and the fellowship, you don't feel the fellowship until Saturday night or Sunday morning, because everybody then has seen each other. But you guys, I walked in here, it's like, wow, this is weird. You guys were like, you could feel the rhythm in here right away. But I walked into this meeting on Monday night after Thanksgiving, crazy as a loon, and something happened to me. It was like, wow, these people really know each other. Really, they were connected. And I sat in the front row, And I sat next to a woman who was knitting. And if you're new, the sound of knitting needles will drive you crazy. And she was just like this, you know. And she had the yarn and everything. By the end of the meeting, I was hearing clang, clang, clang. Jesus Christ. And I'll never forget, she said something to me, like the first time I shared, right? So, you know, it's like, she came up to me and said, it was something like, you know, it was wonderful to hear you talk. And I'm like, you were talking. I was like, she says, you have no idea what to say, do you? I said, no. She says, say thank you. I went, it's that simple? And it really is, you know? And she became one of the closest. She understood me like I didn't even understand me. And she, you know what she started to do? She started giving me speaker tapes. I went, what are you doing this for? She says, just listen to this. Just listen to this. Just listen to this one. And I started listening to things that I never thought I'd hear. And I started laughing. I used to drive cars between LAX and San Diego Airport, and I'd be listening to speaker tapes just driving down the road. You know, people thought, loony bin in the car next to me. But it was this home group, this connection, this person that saw me dying of alcoholism inside of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she used the unity of the group, which is really what it was. If you look at the circle and triangle here, it's like recovery's on the bottom. That's the foundation that we have. You know, you have to be sober to understand what unity and service is, and unity and service is the top part of the triangles, and that's the thing that keeps us bound together. You know, the foundation is great. You can go around the country now, you'll see foundations built all over the country, but nobody has the money to complete the building, you know? So they don't have the unity and the service because they can't get the money and they can't get the help. They got the foundation. You know, and AA is a lot like that. You'll see a lot of meetings start, but they don't have this and they don't have this to keep it together, to keep us inside that circle. And that's really key, you know. It's like everybody has a great idea and they'll start a great meeting, but they don't have to have a sponsorship, if they don't have the fellowship, the recovery of the steps and the traditions. Don't want to mention the concepts because everybody goes, concepts, God damn it, no, not concepts, you know. It's like, you know, if you've ever read the concepts, it's like a legal brief sometimes, you know, but it's not. It's really our experience, you know, as to keep this unity and service together. And that's the thing that really, I believe, keeps us rocketed into that fourth dimension. You know, it's like we can come into AA and become sober. But have you ever noticed people that want to become super sober? They want the cape. They want to fly around and they want to just want to, you know, super sober. Let me correct what you just said, you know. You know, and that what happens is it causes a schism. It causes some break in the unity. You know, it's like I can sit and judge in my head, and as long as I don't say anything, nothing really goes wrong. But when I start saying it from the podium, putting people down, you know, because it breaks the unity of a group. Because sometimes, like, some things are said and it's crap. You know, it's total crap. But somebody on the other side of the room is like, that was profound. Now, who am I to say that they didn't need to hear that? And maybe they'll come back and all of a sudden they'll be directed towards somebody that can really give them the real meat of the program. Because I think that really works in AA a lot, because there's a lot of stuff that's said that's wrong. That's wrong. Quoting book wrong. You know, saying things wrong. You know, like, and then all of a sudden go, let me try to help you out. Let me guide you back here. That's what's wonderful about a meeting that's gone astray. It's just going all over the place. You know, all of a sudden you get somebody that comes up and brings it all back together. That's somebody with a little bit of time, a little bit of experience. You don't necessarily need time, but if you have some great experience and you get up and share that experience, brings the meeting right back to where it's supposed to be. And that really is the biggest part of unity inside the home group. If you don't have one, I'm sure you got, I'm like preaching to the choir here. You guys are a member of a really big home group. That thing, sometimes you bring your message to other people and you see them, you know, and I know this group has gone through a lot of controversy, you know, but I was talking to Luke about it. It's how you live through that controversy that makes people stronger. Relationships fall apart because people don't want to deal with it. You know, the people that deal with it and can fix it, it gets stronger. I was a welder for years. The biggest part of a weld, you know, is, you know, like a chain. The weakest part of a, I forget how it goes now, the weakest part of a chain is the, I forget what it is, what I was going to say, but it was brilliant, let me tell you that, you know. But, you know, a weld keeps things together. It amends something. You know, it's like we amend things. It makes it stronger. Just because it's broken, you don't have to throw it away. We want to throw things away. Fix it first. And if it doesn't work, then toss it out. That's what unity for me in AA is. You know, I have grown immensely through controversy, through experiences inside of AA that, like, make me uncomfortable. Nowhere in my big book does it say, you can sit around here long enough and we'll give you the ability to be comfortable. It doesn't say that. I think AA has made me uncomfortable so I can live with that uncomfortable skin. That's really, you know, it's like one of my favorite books is The Spirituality of Imperfection. That's what AA is all about. It's like learning to live with my imperfections and sharing that with you guys so somebody else in the room can identify with that seemingly hopeless state. That's where unity really, really grows. And then all of a sudden you get one person sharing with another person who's sharing with another person who's sharing with another person. If you watch your newcomers that's finally turned to somebody and go, hey, let me walk this road with you. Boy, oh boy, you got a link. That's really solid. And if you look at the end of the meeting, that link is a circle. And we're all in that circle. Because we've had a foundation of love and service. And sometimes we don't know what love is, but we can serve. And other times we know what service is, but we can't love. But if you put them both together, you got a really strong bond. That's what my home group has given me the ability to do. Just carry its message to the person who's still suffering. So thanks for letting me do that. And Beth is up next.
I love getting the last word. My name is Beth Hartley. I'm an alcoholic. Because of God's grace, AA, and sponsorship, I've been sober since June 26, 1988. And, yeah, I know. That's what I say, too. 10 days was pretty long for me. So... my home group now is the Fox Hall Speaker Meeting in Cary, North Carolina. We meet Wednesday nights at 7. If you're ever in Cary, please come see us. We're a 90-minute meeting that runs short. We're not an hour meeting that's running over. And we're actually formatted after a bigger Fox Hall meeting that's somewhere else. But we have 5 different weeks of readings so that we rotate. You're not just zoning out through how it works every week. And we read the long form of the traditions once every 5 weeks. The 12 concepts are read once every 5 weeks. We actually give a GSR report and an intergroup report from the podium as part of the meeting once a month. And we have found what that does. I got sober in Cincinnati, and my first home group was a big, huge speaker meeting. And at about 8 years sober, I changed sponsors into a more structured sponsorship family and noticed that I never heard the traditions read at my home group. And there was just all kinds of stuff. It was kind of like a little mini conference every week, but there was absolutely no structure there. So we, you know, moved on to a meeting where they actually had elected positions, and eventually we had started a Fox Hall group in Cincinnati. And Cincinnati had a, being a huge metro area, and I don't know if you run into that here, but the service structure, Area 56, was not very strong because the intergroup did it all. You know, the intergroup had the CPCPI, and the intergroup had everything. And so there weren't even districts meeting. I never saw a functioning district till I moved to North Carolina. But what happened when we started the Fox Hall meeting and just followed the format of this other meeting was, as people came, they started to notice that they would go back because they heard a GSR report, and some of them were, you know, 2, 3, 5, 10 years sober and had never, you know, why attend a business meeting? You know, that's, I got stuff to do after the meeting. And they started to hear some of what was going on, and they would go back to their home group and go, do we have a GSR? Who is it? You know, when is our business meeting? And there was kind of this ripple effect out from Fox Hall, and then we started to kind of attract people who were active in service, because that's what happens when you have a group of people active in service. So every third Monday we would be about one third down because it was intergroup meeting night, and all the other intergroup reps from all the other groups, you know, came to Fox Hall on Monday too. But it was a really good way to ripple, you know, ripple that service out. We are a speaker meeting. I have always, except for 1 year of my sobriety, had a home group that only met one night a week. When I first moved to Raleigh, I had a home group that met 2 nights a week. I got sober in a clubhouse in Cincinnati, but my home group has always been outside the clubhouse. I have found, and I'm sure this will offend somebody, but oh well. Everybody's been so nice so far. It's just my turn, I guess. at least where I live, a lot of the clubhouse meetings meet 4, 6, 10, 80 times a week. And it's very easy to just foster this kind of unconscious mentality of come, take, and leave. Come, take, and leave. Come, you can come, you get your meeting in, you leave. There's no coffee to make. There's no chairs to put up. You know, there's a GSR somewhere, but she must go. I attended a women's meeting for a year that was part of a group that met 12 times a week at the clubhouse, and they would read that group's, you know, format because it was part of this bigger group. And they, every week, they're reading, is the institution rep here? Never. It was probably a man, you know, he's not the women's meeting. And, you know, if you want to join this group, see the group secretary. In a year, we never saw the group secretary because they probably went to the noon meetings. You know, and this is what happened when you have a meeting that meets at noon and at night and on weekends, you get 3 or 4 different groups of people. So there was very little representation there of the people who went to the meeting. And so my feeling has always been that, you know, tradition 5, the purpose of the group is to carry its message. And if I am only ever hanging out with my group, how can I carry a message anywhere? And one of my friends in Montana, their group had kind of added a meeting, and they realized suddenly that they were meeting 8 times a week and that they weren't carrying their message anywhere because they were all with each other 8 times a week. And that they were never, you know, they never felt free to miss their home group to go anywhere else to invite people to their home group. And so it got very inbred and it got very stale. And then there started to be, not that that would happen here, I know, but, you know, there started to be some discord and, you know, sometimes things just kind of have to melt down to rebuild. But they, you know, what they did was they started to cut meetings, and they cut back to like 3 meetings a week, I think, so that they could go out to other meetings and say, come to our group, and they could carry their message to other groups. And now that whole area as a whole is a lot stronger. And, you know, we at Foxhall, we attend a couple meetings a week at the clubhouses so that we can invite people out of the clubhouse into, I don't want to go real AA, but you know what I mean, somewhere where they're going to see, a GSR and they're going to see an election for service positions, because that doesn't happen a lot. You can go, it's been said, you can go to a lot of meetings. You know, you can go to a ton of meetings and never belong to a group. I relocated at 14 years sober. And I have to tell you, it has made me much more cognizant of people. You know, it's my first home group. We had a greeting line. Like, I mean, it was like a gauntlet. There was a wheelchair ramp down 3 steps, you know, and we lined both sides. So you had to shake 40 hands just to get to the coffee. It was a nightmare if you were new. And, but you know, once inside, I'm not sure what we did. And one of the things our greeters at Foxhall do is, and we try to have all our home group members aware, is look for that guy who gets greeted in the door and then goes and sits by himself. You know, I've seen people get greeted in the door and then they stand in the middle of the lobby just looking around. And they go, you know, to get a cup of coffee and hope, you know, because we're all like, help me, you know, but why aren't you talking to me, you know, and they'll go. And of course, you know, a couple of home group members have gotten their coffee and then turned around to talk to each other so that now the new person has to move them to get to the coffee. And so we really try to be aware of who's sitting by themselves, you know, who is. And we go, and I'll be the first. I am not, you'll hear tonight, conversation is not really my thing. So it's still difficult for me at 23 years to sit down next to somebody I've never met and say, are you new here? You know, did you just move here? Where else are you going to meetings? But we try to do that with people who are sitting by them, because there is no lonelier place to be than alone in a room full of 100 people. You know, and that was kind of my experience when I moved. I said, I'm new, I moved here, but I wasn't, you know, I didn't have 3 days. I had 14 years. So it was like somebody the next day remembered I'd said I was new. They walked me over, introduced me to 3 women. They looked up, said hello, and went right back to their conversation. And I just thought, I don't ever want to do that to anybody. So we really try, one of the things that the women I sponsor are very aware of is, don't dominate my time at our home group, because a lot of us are in the same home group. You have all week to talk to me. You know, don't, you're not going to meet with me for half an hour before the meeting starts, because we are there to present a meeting to newcomers. We're not there. If we're all in little corners meeting with each other, who's talking to the newcomer? You know, I've got the other 6 days a week that I can meet with you. But at a meeting, my function is to be welcoming newcomers, telling them where other meetings are. One of the things we do is they, it drove me crazy when I first moved to North Carolina, because if somebody says they're new, somebody leaps up, not at Fox Hall, but, you know, the other meeting. but they'll leap up and go get a meeting schedule right then and then pass it around during the meeting. So all the, you know, if it's a new girl, all the women put their numbers on it. And then after the meeting, they're like, here you go. And they all scatter. And, so what we do is we stop and take the time to open the meeting schedule. We circle the meetings where we go to meetings. We write our names on them, and we try to tell her after, you know, that, because the meetings all look alike in a meeting schedule when you're new. And we say, you know, you may not remember who Beth is, but at least you know if you come to this meeting, you will see someone that you've seen before. And here's where we go to meetings. And so we, you know, that's another thing we try to do. Because to me, the main purpose of a meeting is to welcome a newcomer into Alcoholics Anonymous. I rarely anymore go to a meeting because I need the meeting. You know, I am there because the meeting needs me. And if I can't, you know, well, that thought's totally gone. There's another brilliant one, too, I'm sure of it. But, you know, so that's some of what we do at my home group is, you know, because we are there and we have a reputation as being very welcoming to newcomers. Now, we also have a reputation, same thing happened in Cincinnati, because we ask our guys to wear coats and ties if they're speaking or if they're chairing. And, you know, we ask the women to dress, you know, if they're speaking. I am very rarely, never at the podium in pants unless I, like, didn't read the flyer to see that there was a workshop and only brought one dress with me, like today. but, you know, we do that. So then you start hearing, of course, the rumors, like, you can't even go to Fox Hall if you don't wear a tie. And, you know, it's like, we kind of figure, well, once they're talking bad about us, we know we're doing it right, because, you know, that's just what happens. But we, one of the things I learned moving, and then, you know, I knew I had sponsored enough people through moves, and I've always been a people watcher, and seeing people move in at Cincinnati and seeing what happens when they don't plug in, or when we had somebody move to town and come into Fox Hall, and she immediately wanted to start changing everything. And, you know, she finally came back a year later and made amends to the group and said, it never occurred to me that there was probably five other groups in Cincinnati already doing what I wanted Fox Hall to do, and I could have just gone to one of them. You know, that it is not necessary for me to remake your group into my image when I get there. That, you know, I should look around and see if other groups, and I would say this to you if you're new, if your home group's doing a bunch of stuff, you don't, you know, look around and there's probably a group already doing whatever it is you think we should be doing. You know, Fox Hall is very different from most of the other meetings in Cary, and that's on purpose. You know, that's on purpose. When we moved to North Carolina, it was very quiet. I mean, they don't even clap at the convention when you read the steps. And we clap if you get your name right, you know. So we're an enthusiastic group. But, you know, my motto is kind of infiltrate, don't attack. So when we got to North Carolina, we knew it would be about 5 years before we could get a, you know, because if you walk in attacking, you just become the angry woman and they never hear anything that you say. So infiltrate, you know, there were a few other meetings we kind of tried to turn around because they were close to our house and handy. And so we just, you know, if there's a meeting that's way off base, you know, attend, commit to it for a while, bring two or three ringers with you so there's more than one of you talking about the book, And a lot of times, you know, if you chair for a month and then your friend chairs and your friend chairs, a lot of times a meeting will kind of get back on track. Because, you know, I've been to a lot of meetings where I think, I am never coming here again. And then the other voice is like, you have to come because someone who reads the big book needs to be here. Because they drift way out there. And although I do say if you can't save it in 90 days, then save yourself. But, you know, it's like kind of like lifeboats on the Titanic. But you know, it is, I mean, we have a responsibility to carry, you know, if we're reading the book and doing what it says, we have a responsibility to carry that message. And if I'm only ever hanging out with my home group, who can I carry that to? So me, I'm kind of an advocate of one night a week, but I, you know, we're very active, we're very service-oriented, we're very sponsorship-oriented, and you know, you're going to find pockets of that everywhere you go, and it's just, it's a good place to be. You know, I love my home group, and I'm proud of my home group because we do have a service ethic and a sponsorship ethic, and it's very evident when there's a group like that because you see guys in ties, and you see attendance, and people are laughing and having fun. And, you know, if I wasn't having fun here, I wouldn't have stayed. So, thank you.
Thanks, guys. Now, that's what I consider to be one of my favorite parts of this weekend is where we get to hear our questions, and then the speakers will answer them. Beth, since you have the most time, you get to decide who's answering the questions. So, the first question is what type of factors should a responsible, quote-unquote, recovering alcoholic think about when deciding to choose a home group or change a home group? So I don't know who wants to answer. Who's going to answer this?
I'm not picking.
Joe?
What was that again? What kind of factors should be responsible? Oh, I like the way somebody put it in quotes, too. Responsible recovering alcoholic. Think about when deciding whether to change your home group. Wow, that's interesting. What kind of factors? You know, I think it's got to be your core soul, really, if you're not hearing the message. Really, it's got to be that relationship you have with your sponsor, for one thing. Because a lot of times people change home groups without having even asked for direction on it. You know, it's like, I think I'm leaving my home group. My sponsor says, why don't you see if you can change it first? If you can get it back on track first, there's got to be a problem. There's got to be like, I have to take an inventory of what I'm doing wrong, not what they're doing wrong. What am I doing? Am I not being responsible? Am I letting it wander? Am I letting it go in a place it shouldn't go? Does the group have a conscience? Does the group have a service commitment? Does the group have these things that make me feel like I'm part of that? And if that's not the case, that's the responsible thing for me to do. And look, if before I go out and start a resentment meeting, look around and see if there's something that's already out there that I can bring my message to their message so I can bring it together and maybe grow. It's all about me growing and helping a group grow. It really is about being emotionally sober. You know? And sometimes groups aren't. Sometimes groups only, they have a message and they only grow at a certain level. I've been members of a lot of groups that just stopped growing. Men's groups sometimes do that. They're attractive to a certain group of people, but they don't attract the other group of people. And it's kind of weird. You know, specialty groups are the same way. My home group is an open group, and it's open for a reason that it's like, for me, it's like I have to make sure that if people have a problem with alcoholism, if people don't have a problem with alcoholism, my group will help them understand that. So that's maybe I answered that. I don't know.
Steve Lamb, alcoholic. You know, I actually don't have a comparative on this because I did not choose my home group. This is where I go. And my experience with the home group, it's been really important to really deal with a group conscience because very typically, particularly when I was new, I was absolutely convinced they were doing it wrong. Just doing it wrong. And one of the things that's important is to stay with that home group to realize that your mind gets changed. I mean, one of the things that was pointed out to me relatively early on is in the big book, I think it's on page 23, it says, therefore, we think the main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind rather than the body. And you hear a lot of times when you're new, you don't trust your thinking. Don't go into that neighborhood alone. That's where you need a sponsor. And then by the time you get to the 11th step on page 87, it says the hunch or occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. It's like, wait a minute, you're telling me, you know, on step three that this is not trustworthy, but by 11 when I'm praying and meditating that I'm going to be able to rely on this. What happens? 4 through 11. Okay? And the point of that is the mind gets changed over time. And sometimes the fellowship is to be enjoyed, and sometimes the fellowship is to be survived. I mean, we conflict with each other a lot. You know, there's been controversy in this group. There's been controversy in my group. I have stayed in my group. I have not chosen to leave my group. I've chosen to try with the, you know, 15, 20 guys that I sponsor to make incremental changes through example rather than just voting. And that's been very important to me, and that's worked with me. But I knew people, and I know people who have left. I was talking to a gentleman earlier about just changing sponsorship. I've never changed sponsors. I don't have a comparative about that. I've had guys that have come to me. The only direction that I give them is to make sure that they thank that their sponsor, you know, for all the help that's been provided to them. And if they're going to leave a home group or they're going to change a sponsor, I think that's the thing you should pray and meditate on and ask yourself, are you doing this for what you think you want or what you can bring to the party? I mean, you talked about going to a meeting and trying to take something to the meeting rather than you hear, well, you know, I'm not getting anything out of those meetings. I don't like those meetings. There's a shift of consciousness that I believe happens through sponsorship and the steps where at some point in time, hopefully, we get to the point where we're going to a meeting and we're looking for the newcomers. I happen to be very step-centric. I'm not focused on the meet. To me, I go to a lot of meetings because that's where we harvest newcomers, plain and simple. We collect them. We herd them into the corner. We pick them off. You know? We do. We have a vampiric need for newcomers. You know, it's... And so, I mean, that's just my experience. I wouldn't even, you know, to me, when I've had people talk about changing home groups, I think that they need to do an inventory. And then if they're comfortable with it, that's fine. Because, you know, they'll be fine if they go to AA, wherever they go. But a lot of times we shift things because we think that they'll change. And a lot of times we need to change.
How do the trusted servants of the group decide what to do if the majority of the group has become apathetic?
We yell at them. We have a sense of humor. We actually, our group offers babysitting, and our new babysitting coordinator is kind of gung-ho, so she had just sent an email to everybody saying, you know, if you can't come, we'll get your sponsor to babysit and blah, blah, blah. And then, if you know, if you can't keep your commitment, and somebody pointed out, what if their sponsor doesn't go to the meeting? So she sent an apology and said, I don't know, you know, what made me do that? And actually what we'll do if you don't keep your commitment is make you wear a pointy cone hat with a big L on it. And I have a feeling we're not going to do that either. And, you know, it's very hard, but I have found that anywhere it is very often, you know, and it's not even just in AA. It's in an office. It's at a church. There's 5 to 10% of the people doing 90% of the work, and that's just the way it goes. You know, I mean, the first thing we have to do is keep leading by example, because if we're just telling you, you know, I'm a people watcher, and I'm watching your feet. I might be seeing your mouth move, but I have a good friend who says, turn down the sound and watch the picture, because the words will confuse you. And so, you know, we are there early. We're putting up chairs. And I remember, I don't know, probably 10 or 11 years ago, I was setting up chairs, and I was starting to get a little irritated because, you know, it was an 8 o'clock meeting, 20 till 8 sometimes. There was two people there, and this was a, you know, a speaker meeting where 80 people came. And sometimes I'd be there alone setting up chairs, and most of the time I would just go, well, you know, I got to be 12 years sober doing this. And, you know, for all I know, some of these people who aren't may never see 12 years sober. And ultimately, you know, I have the life I have as a result of taking these actions. So I'm just going to continue to take them whether anybody else does or not, you know, and hopefully they will follow along. And hopefully, because ultimately our message is, you know, if you want what we have, and are willing to go to any lengths to get it. And I have to, it's like the cake recipe. I have to do what they do to get what they have. Now, I will admit that every now and then I would walk in, look around, set my chair up, put my coat on it, and then, like, go get coffee or something. But it wasn't very often. We're kind of having an issue now because we have 80 people. We have 30 home group members. And 3 or 4 weeks ago, somebody I sponsored just looked up and noticed there was 6 people there before the meeting, you know, 20 minutes before. And we had 3 people setting up chairs that weren't even home group members. One of them was 31 years sober. One of them was 26 years sober. And one of them's 18 years sober. And all 3 of them were home group members elsewhere. And one of those 3 came to set up chairs and then leave because he had a commitment somewhere else. But it's like, you know, our old timers are setting up the chairs right now. And that is not, we're not real happy about that. But we, you know, we got to kind of keep leading by example and hope that we can rope some people into doing it. Because since we are a speaker meeting, part of what we do to get to know each other is, you know, we would bring our dinner with us and set up the chairs and then, you know, just sit down and eat together. But, you know, and my sponsee who looked up and realized, oh, my God, there's only 6 people here. This is unacceptable. I said, you know, this is why I've been asking you for months to not sit in a corner and meet with your sponsees before the meeting, because this didn't just start last week. You know, but when everybody's in a corner meeting with their sponsees, then nobody is setting up chairs and making coffee. So that's all.
There's a guy who attends my home group who does not have a desire to stop drinking, and because of his behavior, he may put our group at risk of losing our location, among other things. What can I do?
Pete Lamb, alcoholic.
Well, if you're at risk of losing your meeting place, my experience is you ask the guy to leave. And you ask him gently first, and then you do what you need to do. We've had that problem before. My view is if, you know, I'm not an adherent to the guys who say that, you know, if you're drunk, you can't be in an AA meeting. We've had many guys who are drunk in the AA meeting, both mixed meetings and my men's stag. I don't think that's a reason to kick somebody out. But if they're causing a problem, they got to go, because it's usually the rules of either, you know, if you're at a church or community center or this university, if you have someone that's causing a problem, you have to enforce it, just like you have to pick up the chairs and clean up the coffee, you know, cups and the cigarette butts and stuff like that. And this goes in line with what was been talked about earlier. You know, I was told a long time ago that you can't tell an alcoholic anything, but you can show him everything. And one of the most spiritual things you can ever do with someone is say, get in the car, my car. I can't tell somebody go on the panel, but I can say, you know, hey, Jerry, Bill, and we're going on a panel. Be at my house. You know, get in my car. We go. And then after 6 months, it's amazing because I tell Jerry, it's now your panel. And then he says, okay, Jim, Joe, you know, and that's how it works. Through that sponsorship. And people who are being disruptive, you ask them nicely, you explain it to them, but if they're drunk or they have mental problems or whatever, I think you do what you need to do to remove them. I mean, that's my experience. I haven't had it happen many times, but we have had it happen.
We like quotes here, Joe. How is your quote, I feel like I belong, I'm comfortable, end quote, moment in your home group, and is it okay for my home group to be my higher power? You can go ahead and answer if you like.
Oh, I understand. When did you first feel like you belonged in your home
group? When did I first feel like I belonged in my home group? Wow. That's actually pretty good. Is it okay for me to make my home group my higher power? It's okay for you to do whatever you want, really. Really. It really is, you know. When I first got sober, everybody talked about, you know, God, group of drunks, and then they would talk about, you know, make the doorknob your higher power. I never understood that one. Never understood that one until one night I heard a guy say, make the door to an AA meeting your higher power. I was floored by it. It was just a perception shift that I went, I get that. So then all of a sudden there's something that happens inside. I don't know when I first felt comfortable. You know, is it the first time you share something profound? Is it the first time you share? Is it the first time somebody says, I really like what you had to say? You know, it's really, I don't know when that moment happens when you feel comfortable in your group. But it's probably when you actually, for me, I'll never forget it, when I was at my home group and Tom Higgins was sitting on a table like this with his legs shaking back and forth, and he said something to me that I scared the death out of me. He said, will you be my sponsor? That was when I felt like I belonged. That's when I felt like maybe something the group has given me the ability to share its message because somebody else wanted to hear something that I needed. And he was my first sponsee, and it was the moment that I believe, Steve talked about it this morning out of the quote out of the big book, but my old sponsor Bob said he didn't believe that he's worked the 12 steps until he heard somebody else's fifth step. That's when trust really happens. And you start trusting, and that person starts trusting you. Then you have a fellowship, and that comes from that home group. So it's really the action that I have to take, whether it's just showing up, sitting there with my arms crossed, with my best stay away from me look, and all of a sudden I start letting my arms go, letting the pretense go, and all of a sudden somebody says, hey, I need your help. And when somebody asks you for your help, it's a moment that you probably will cherish for the rest of your life.
These two questions are basically the same, and I'll just paraphrase. How can I help somebody who has a problem with heroin?
You go, girl.
If I keep this up, it's going to be empty in here tonight. We can all go home early. Well, the short answer is I would send them to an AA that deals with their addiction. If they are, I have seen, and I'm, singleness of purpose is one of my favorite things. And one of the things I do in Raleigh, they have someplace called the Healing Place, which everybody thinks is a treatment center. It's not, but I won't go into that. It's a homeless shelter that offers some 12-step stuff, and they teach a drug is a drug is a drug, and blah, 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 and when I was new, probably the first 5 years I was sober, I was like, oh, come to RA, we have more fun, it's all the same, and as I have stayed sober, I have come to believe that it is not, and I see what happens. One of the things I saw happen was the clubhouse where I got sober, the Friday night meetings, probably 200 people, and a guy got up to speak and identified himself as an addict. And, you know, sometimes people come in, I sponsor somebody who thought she was a drug addict when she got sober, and then she, like, realized how much she drank the longer she stayed sober. And now she's alcoholic. It was magic. But this guy introduced himself as an addict, and I thought, well, okay, we'll see. Well, then, almost the first thing out of his mouth was, I got drunk a couple times in high school, but I just didn't really like what it did for me, so I didn't drink much. And then he talked about running drugs to Texas for the rest of the hour, which was all very exciting, but I thought, you know, I mean, I lost custody of my children because I couldn't not take a drink. And I'm sitting in that meeting looking around at 200 people, 100 of whom are probably under 90 days. And I'm thinking, you know, what do I tell the woman who just lost her kids because she couldn't not take a drink? Because you know how it is when you're new and there's a big speaker meeting, the guy talking is probably the president of AA, you know. And here's a guy saying in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, well, you know, I didn't really drink much because I didn't like it. Where do I go? You know, if I come to an AA meeting and they didn't drink, where do I go? And so I have come to believe that, you know, and I've seen